Comber, a town outside Belfast in Northern Ireland, is fast becoming a food destination because of one pair in particular, actually. In this week's episode of Chew the Fat, we drop by Indie Food, a deli and specialty food shop that's a mecca for food lovers, wonderfully stocked with small artisan craft producers from the island of Ireland exclusively.
Throughout this debut series of Chew the Fat, we've spoken to distillers, chefs, restaurateurs, food producers, all people immersed in the food industry and playing different parts in bringing tastes and flavours to the palates of the general public. So naturally, we turn to those who champion other producers.
Those who fill their shelves with gorgeous must-try produce and act as a treasure trove for people looking to try new things, whether that's seeking out something exotic in flavour or just wanting to support and stock up on local produce.
We chew the fat with Johnny McDowell and Laura Bradley, who co-run Indie Food as they open the doors of their new, larger premises in Comber. We actually met them a year or two ago at the Blasnaharan Awards in Dingle, and then again earlier this year we took our first ever visit to their previous space in the same town. But now we find them in Indie Food version 3.0, but is it 3 or 4.0? Who knows? Let's find out.
Hello, my name's Johnny. I think I'm termed the chief taster at Indie Food, or one of the chief tasters.
Hi, I'm Laura, and I am the other chief taster at Indie Food, chief taster at, I suppose. And I work here with Johnny. He would do a lot of the markets and loves going out and about, and I usually find me in the shop or doing sort of the website and digital marketing. That's more my thing.
So Indie Food, we are standing in the middle of beautiful space. Now this is version 2, or is it version 3 or 4?
It is version three. Yeah. Version one was in my parents' loft about 200 metres from here, where I kitted it all out and bought shed loads of Irish produce and tried to sell it all online. That didn't work too well, so I took it all out to markets and introduced everybody to it. Version two, we stayed up a set of stairs and it was 100 metres in the other direction, in the beautiful little courtyard where we were for 2.5 years until I met Laura, and Laura said, "You gotta get out of here. These stairs are killing me," quite literally, as she fell down them.
Oh God.
I had many a tumble during the years, and so unfortunately did some of our customers, and it used to break your heart to see customers leaving with good food, but it smashed along with them at the bottom of your steps. So yeah, Laura was quite right. Yeah, we gotta get out of here. So we put the plans in motion, the two of us, the end of last Christmas. Our lease was coming up then, et cetera, et cetera. We want to expand the range. Laura had a lot of new ideas. And yeah, we decided to make the jump and get downstairs to a down floor premises. And this is where we are. So we've been in for 6 weeks now. It took about 4 months of work to get it up to scratch. But yeah, really proud of it.
Oh, it's a really, really gorgeous space, and after being in the other one, it's just so, so, so different.
Yeah, the space is loftier, I would say, than the last one. It's all wood and quite raw, I guess you could say, and quite stripped back. Lots more shelving, more things at eye level as well, I think, than the last place, and just more space in general.
Yeah, it took us a really long time to come up with how we were going to lay it out, because we'd gone from this tiny space to this was just a big dusty space when we got it, and we didn't really know what to do with it, because you just don't know when you're looking at something kind of empty. But we knew we wanted all the products to be center stage, so we wanted to keep everything kind of rustic and comfortable and kind of cool, and it's the look a lot of places are going for now, that kind of, I suppose, industrial chic a little bit. But it really allows all the kind of bright branding and the cheese and the deli counter and the ice cream to really sort of jump out at you rather than being distracted by the decor. Apart from our paintings.
Oh yeah, the paintings are gorgeous.
We got a local artist who lives maybe 50 metres up the road here to paint 3 animals for us. So the goat here, and this is one of the goats from Centola.
Ah.
Fergus in the middle was one of my pigs. And then Gus is one of the Black Beef Dexter herd, who are the beef that we sell here, that's from just down the road in St. Field. So yeah, I love them. They're kind of, they have a lot of meaning for us, and they're with our brand colours, they just give a bit of pop of colour.
Will we start on the Saintola and other cheeses that are here, because it's hard not to walk into the shop without wanting to...
The smell sort of hits you.
Yeah, you just want to belly flop in it and just bathe in there, because it's such a great cheese selection. Good selection of Irish, but is there a couple
all
around
Irish,
the world? All Irish, amazing, amazing.
Shop, it's our sort of key ethos, yep. It's local. You know, north and south, all of the island of Ireland, all throughout, and the cheese is one of the things that surprises people the most. And Johnny is kind of our cheese expert or cheese obsessor, and he, you know, has kind of been discovering all these great smaller producers over the years, and that's something we're really, really kind of chuffed with, is the amazing sort of selection that we can get in Ireland that people don't even know about.
Yeah, it's all like Irish cheese. It's you know, we know we've got world-class dairy, but it was always, I suppose, you know, down to people then to have the skills of cheesemakers, and we're seeing that now. We're seeing some new blood coming into the scene, specifically here in Northern Ireland. You know, you've got, there's one, for instance, Young Buck, Mike Thompson, just down the road from us. Mike, young guy, went away to the Artisan School of Food over in England, learnt his trade, done his little stages around different cheese houses over in England, built up a great reputation, and then started making, you know, world-class cheese. He gathers the milk as raw milk from a local dairy just up the road and brings it up and down a couple of times a week and makes this fabulous Young Buck, and he can't supply it enough. So it's, you know, fabulous story. You've got Christo Swanepoel here. He's in Ballywalter. So again, just on the a couple of towns over from where Mike is, he makes a goat gouda.
A goat gouda, yeah. I think we tried that before.
I think you did, yeah. He's matured it now up to 6 months, but a while ago it was up to 4 months, so he's brought it up a couple of months. He's also got a whiskey-soaked goat gouda, which is stunning. It's done with Ecklinville. They do Dunville's whiskey down the peninsula there. It's washed in that. And then he's also got a cow's milk cumin gouda as well. So he's inspired by his wife, who's from Holland, makes great, sorry, gouda. I got lessons at the weekend. I was up in Ballycastle doing my little cheese stall, and there were so many Dutch up on the north coast, obviously enjoying themselves. So I would say gouda, you went, what? Gouda. So I says, if you mind if I don't spit on you, you know, while I'm doing this. But yeah, but a lot of fun. So yeah, he's inspired by Angelique, his wife, from there. We've got the Hickeys, these lovely cheeses from the Sperrins. Julie's an American cheesemaker. Met Kevin, fell in love, both love cheese. Came back to Ireland, started producing this wonderful, wonderful cheese. You've got Ballylisk. Ah, of course, can't forget the Wright brothers. Yeah, Mark and Dean's. This is the first farmhouse cheese out of Northern Ireland, maybe in a couple of decades. We're still trying to put a number in that. Yeah. I've asked all the cheese guys. Nobody really knows. But it's okay. It's
a triple cream cheese.
Yeah. I mean, it's dangerous. Yeah. Really dangerous.
Anything with the word triple cream on it is a good thing, though.
Absolutely.
It is basically your clotted cream of the cheese world. So you brie.
Yeah.
And then you've got cream added back in there.
Wow.
So it's a little bit firmer, saltier, and it's tasting really, really good.
And feeling it is actually quite a firm cheese. It looks on the surface, you expect it to be like a squidgy brie, but it is quite solid. But
again, really, really different product, and I like that. There's not too many people crossing paths or taking loads of influences, whether it's from France, Italy, Portugal, Greek-style cheeses, but they're putting an Irish twist on it, which is fabulous. And it's great to see that the raw milk cheese producers are still going strong, getting behind each other, keeping that movement going. We get a lot of our customer requests just for raw milk cheeses, and we're very proud to stock basically every raw milk producer that is in Ireland in the deli here.
And I see Velvet Cloud there as well. Delicious Velvet Cloud.
The new sheep's cheese. Again, feedback from the customers has been superb. We started off with the yogurt coming up to us, and then the sheep's cheese, and that sort of crumbly feta-like gorgeousness. It's been really, really popular. And we had Sean Fitzgerald up there a couple of weeks ago doing a tasting from Cratloe Hill sheep's cheese. Drove all the way up from County Clare. Firstly, to see me in my little market stall up in Coleraine's. That was a 7.5-hour drive. And then he'd done a 6.5-hour 2 weeks later to come up here to one of our sort of open Saturdays or Meet the Maker Saturdays. Yeah. And his sheep's cheese, the oldest one in Ireland, it's fabulous. Great product, sort of that Manchego-y style, particularly on his mature one.
Yeah.
It's great cheese.
I'm just in the corner of my eye. I can't help but notice the incredible meats and charcuterie selection here. And again, it's actually something that we know a lot of Northern Irish producers for in particular. You know, I see Corndale Farm just at the back there, who it's you know, it's one of the best chorizos in particular. And of course, the Black Bacon O'Doherty's.
And then a spini charcuterie as well would be the other one that we were, one of the things we were really excited about having in the new deli was cut meats. So instead of having all the pre-packs of all the different charcuteries, we now can cut 4 slices or 40 slices, you know, whatever you need. And we have that with a spini and Corndale, and it's proved really, really popular because people love to be able to mix and match. And it also makes it a lot easier for people to taste, you know, if they're kind of curious about them, because a lot of them have, particularly the spini products, they have Italian names. So maybe someone isn't too sure about what Lomo is, but they want something that's a little bit like Parma ham, or so it's been really, really popular for us. And they're both really fabulous producers. I mean, Alistair's ethos for his free-range pork is obviously kind of brilliant and something I'm really, really passionate about. And then Johnny has made, from a spini, has made some really great movements to kind of create his own style of farming with his pigs. So he's moved into kind of, it's strange because there's no sort of classification for something that isn't free-range but isn't commercial. Mm. So his pigs are in deep straw that is actually a fermented bedding. So if they're kind of cold, they can go right underneath to the bottom and curl up in the heat. If they're hot, they can stay on the top of it. And they get access to the outdoors when the ground is firm. And when it's not, they've just got lovely big deep kind of sheds to nestle about in. So it's so much better than commercial pork. But you can't really, you have to tell people about it. There's no sticker you can put on it, which I think is a real pity, because particularly in Ireland, free-range pork is really hard to produce. It takes a lot of land, and apart from recently, we get so much rain that the ground is just destroyed. So that it's a fabulous kind of middle ground, and it's been really exciting to go on Johnny's journey with him, actually.
Have you spotted these? Yeah, I could tell your eyes were looking at them. So there's Kilner jars with salt and pepper salmon skins.
And eggs.
You should try these.
Salted egg salmon skins.
So Johnny maybe knows more about these, because these are made by a local Chinese guy.
Yeah, guy. Just arrived in one day and said, I've got this sort of Hong Kong Cantonese style snack that I'm making down in Newry. He says, oh, right, okay. Salmon skins. I first of all thought it was a dog treat.
We have a wonderful local producer called Armstrong Twisted Fish who make dog treats that we sell in the deli, so I think that's where he got them.
So I just tell everybody, yeah, it'll be nice for your coat or your hair, you know, just eat them, but they're a great snack. Really good with, obviously, a nice glass of beer in your hand, nice and salty.
Really Moorish and like crispy. And have a taste of fish, but not that much. It's really, really nice. It's like creamy.
Yeah, I think the egg, if it is something in Korean food, they do, because you get those kind of egg crisps and things too, and it adds like a real creaminess, and it sounds odd, but it's slightly reminiscent of creme brulee to me. You get that like kind of butteriness at the back of your throat. So it's good.
No, I see what you mean there. I'm getting that.
That kind of sums up, I suppose, where we are with indie food, especially. Like, we get so many people, hello Robert, just turning up at the doorstep. Robert Bell from Bell's Coffee House, thanks Robert, SD Bell's. And yeah, we get random people turning up with you know, little packages of things we'd like to try. Some of them are really nice, some of them don't quite work, you know, but we're prepared to give everything a try. And I suppose, as Laura said earlier on, that ethos of us, you know, sticking with produce from the island of Ireland, you know, makes it, you know, people know where to come when it comes to the name. So yeah, things like this really excite us.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's I think people are really getting confident now, and all the, you know, obviously a bit more multiculturalism coming into the city. We touched on it with the cheesemakers there, but it's happening throughout the food, you know, wherever we see it.
Well, you know, hot sauce isn't a very Northern Irish thing, you know, but there's there's a whole shelf of it there.
Yeah.
I have to admit, it's maybe probably not my favourite thing. I think I just find it all too hot, any sort of heat. I like a little bit of chili, but but we have one customer who just wants the hottest thing in the world all the time, don't we?
Yeah, you basically bathe in the stuff. the mixed chili extreme. In fact, I'm seeing none on the shelf there at the minute because he buys it all. And he just bathes in it. But yeah, we love customers like that. Yeah. You know, it's easy to remember their name that way more than anything. That's the hot sauce guy, and you know, that's how it works. You know, we've got some great ones, whether it's the Red Dog Foods, that's the big American, Paul Van Gelder, from Kilkeel. Don't you've met Paul before in your travels?
No.
Oh, you got to meet Paul. Larger than life character. You'd see him around, sort of, especially around the market scene, both all around Ireland, actually, and all the big barbecue shows. He's there with his rubs, his hot sauces, his jellies, his salts, him and Barbara Ann. And yeah, their products are fantastic. And he's a great exponent of barbecue himself, so he's able to give instruction. So he's come down to the shop here, the old premises, and done some barbecuing on the Saturday afternoon, and nice pulled brisket and wings, and shows people how to use it, because I think that's important with all this. It's actually telling customers. It's hard just to throw something on a shelf and go, hey, go with it.
Mm.
You know, you need to get out there. And
that's the thing, especially because the two of you have so much passion for all these products. You seem to know so many of them intimately in a way, in that it's not just stocking them. You know who made them. You know the stories behind them. Is that really important to you to have that connection?
I think it's massive. It takes me right back to when I started the business and started to lift the phone to people. They asked them, could I have their product? And would they send me up? And then, what? Who are you? Your parents loft in the middle of Cumber County Down? Is your head screwed on? And they were probably quite right. So I made a point of going and meeting them all, whether it was around at shows or, you know, arriving up on their farm and sort of just doing a wee bit what you guys do, you know, travel around, get immerse yourself into it. And then once you've made that connection with somebody, then there's that trust, level of trust, and you're able to then pass on that story to the customer. You can see the person, you know, what you can remember what they're telling you, those little touch points, and you just, you know, you're telling their story. You're the custodian of their food, so you're very proud to look after it and to tell the story. So we've got a lot of personal contact. Laura, she'll probably tell you a bit more about how she set up sort of the Maker Saturdays, where we get sort of the taster people to come in and sort of taste with us now, and they can meet the producers, meet the makers, and that's really important as well.
Yeah, well, definitely. I think it's about keeping it really good fun for us as well, because we both love food, we love local food, we love cooking, and bringing, you know, as much of that into our day-to-day life is exactly what having your own business is about. You know, as you guys know, you know, if you can turn your passion into your job, okay, you never stop working, but you're also working at something that you really love. And being able to have the guys visit us in the shop is brilliant. And the customers love it. You know, it makes such a difference. We can talk about the products, but when the person who's actually here, who's, you know, been milking the cow in the morning, or, you know, has just made their sauces that day before they brought them in, you know, it really sort of, people that are passionate about things, it's infectious, you know, it really carries. So yeah, we're delighted to have people here as much as possible. And last week we had Tom from Kurlagi Cheese up on the Friday. Then we had a young guy called Jack who's just started making some fudge in on the Saturday. And it just, it really adds to the weekly sort of experience.
In the last place you had a very lovely cheese room. Have you brought that here, or is that a thing of the past?
We still have an event space. So we've moved the cheese out, obviously, into the deli counter here, as we've seen, but we've also opened, we've got a space here, which is nearly finished.
Well,
kind of finished.
Oh, perfect.
A lot bigger.
So much bigger.
So much more space, but still the same amount of people.
Yeah.
We're still sort of aiming for that 24 max intimate dining experience, where we still really, it's really fun to cook for 24 people and to talk to 24 people and to serve 24 people. Much more than that, and I think it would become a little bit harder, because we're not professional chefs, you know, we're just kind of seasoned cooks, I suppose. It was really important to us to keep this space, both for the supper clubs and for educational nights and for fun kind of cheese and beer nights and all, sort of like the cheese tasting you guys were at. You know, it definitely, it's a big part of what we do, and again, it's bringing sort of fun into it.
It's a real home. It's really inviting. It's small, it's intimate, but yet it's like airy and lofty, and
the theme from outside the shop has come through as well, and I like that a lot.
We definitely had one of the big decisions actually when we moved in was whether we pulled out the suspended ceiling or not, because obviously it was quite a big job, and we didn't even sort of, we completely underestimated it, because we thought we'd take the suspended ceiling away and there would be a ceiling above. I mean, there wasn't. There was just all of this stuff, like cables and wires and grubby stuff. As you say, you know, that extra space is it makes such a difference to the feel to everything, because yeah, this room is really cozy, but it's also sort of airy and bright, and yeah, we're chuffed with it.
I love it.
Yeah, it's good.
It's very you guys. It's really hard to explain that, but it's exactly what I'd imagine from you guys. So I love it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We've had the Edible Flower, Aaron and Joe doing wonderful supper clubs back when we launched that room, which was about 2 years ago now, back in the last place. So they're still with us. They done a Love Local supper club there about 3 weeks ago, which is our launch of this space. And that was fantastic. Two nights booked out. We had the guys from Mezzi came up a couple of weekends ago and done a lovely Middle Eastern night for us. So again, that was producers coming into your space and using it. So that's the joy of this. Anybody can use it. We work with the producers that come up with a way that can work for them, work for us. And yeah, we've got an exciting plans for August. We've got a great local chef here, Will Brown, coming in to do, we think it's going to be called the 10 Mile Supper Club for 3 nights. That's going to be produce that has come from a 10 mile radius. Something he's very passionate about, and obviously it suits us down to the ground as well. So yeah, that's going to be a challenge, but very exciting. And then yeah, with so many different chefs now, and people ask, hobbyists and people who really want to get into it, wanting to use the space as well, which is, again, as Laura said, it's really exciting for us because it makes it fun as well. Yeah. Variety still keeps us going, keeps us interested, and that's what the new space has given us. It's given us another lease of life. Laura and Claire, who works for us now as well, come in, make wonderful fresh salads, and we're now expanding, so those are the outdoor catering side of things. So we've had a lot of people come in and say, oh, you've got those wonderful salads, would you do those for an outside event? Can you do canapes and barbecues and stuff? So yeah, there's a lot more people knock on our door because they appreciate sort of the food that we do here.
Now, us Irish love to chat about alcohol. Am I right in thinking that there isn't any alcohol on sale here?
Is that true choice?
It's welcome to Northern Ireland, basically. Yeah, we have very archaic laws here, which unfortunately don't permit us to sell alcohol unless we've got over £100,000 probably in our pocket. That's the reality of it. So, no, yeah, we've no license. So yeah, we just don't do it. We can't. It's of course it's very well policed as well. So yeah, it's such a shame because we've got wonderful craft brewers popping up, craft distillers, but we go to them instead. So I, for example, was over at Shortcross Gin, the Redemption Estate on Saturday, doing sort of a cheese and gin pairing afternoon. And yeah, well, exactly.
What a hard day. Yeah. I'm here slaving away on a busy Saturday, and he's drinking gin cocktails and giving it.
Centola. Yeah. We don't get me wrong, we're cramped by those laws, but we've got some other people we work with here in town. We've got a local pub and off license, McBride's in the Square, who help us out at Christmas time to do our hampers and things like that. So yeah, it's not easy.
Every time we meet Laura and Johnny, we're amazed at their energy and passion for produce. Both such fabulous supporters of local produce from this incredible island we call home. The business they're in is actually kind of similar to ours in a way, spotlighting and championing food producers, helping to tell their story to the masses, and encourage everyone to participate in Irish food wherever they can and in whatever way they can.
So, never once to shy away from asking for a little bit of support ourselves, you can join us on Patreon, the crowdfunding digital community where from as little as some loose change a month, you can become a patron of this podcast and help with the running costs and ensure future production goes swimmingly as ever. Whilst you'll also get exclusives from us too. Simply visit patreon.com/gastrogaze and follow the steps to sign up.
Or over on PayPal, there's also the option to simply do a one-time contribution to help with the small costs of this podcast. It really is just two of us, a microphone, our laptops, and our little car producing this every week. So if a monthly subscription isn't your bag, you can support us one time only over at paypal.me/gastrogaze. And as ever, however you can help, we really, really do appreciate when you do. So thank you. Back to Comber now, as we ask both Laura and Johnny about how it must feel to be a real destination for food lovers.
I suppose we do. Well, I don't think of it like that. You know, you just do your job and your, well, do your passion, do your job and whatever comes out of it. But yeah, you know, they're your friends at the end of the day as well. It's part of your life now. Whether you're here in the store, you're out at your market stall, where obviously you meet a lot of these producers for the first time and form those relationships. So yeah, it's nice to be thought in that way. Yeah, very humbling as well. So. Yeah, and I suppose, you know, the customer feedback, I'm sure Laura would say the same thing, is where we get our, you know, real joy from, seeing how excited they are to see what we've brought to the market. Because in the early days, you thought, God, I'm mad, when I was up those steps in my parents' attic, you know, God, what are you doing? And then, yeah, it's all starting to make a bit more sense.
Is the main draw of the shop the cheese and meats, or is it more spread out?
It is spread amongst the shop, but the cheese is definitely a big focus point. I think that's why we sort of decided on that beautiful long deli counter that you saw for the cheese and meat, because that's something that we are so different to anywhere else. You know, you can get sort of good cheese most places, but a lot of the Irish cheese you can't get. And to have it all in one place and one offering where you can come along and chat to us and taste things and find new things that you love. And it's definitely a focus for us. And the kind of charcuterie and cured meats, because we love those. You know, it's something else that we really enjoy. But it is spread amongst the shop too. You know, particularly in this shop now that there's a bit more space, people can browse in a much more relaxed manner, so they can have a wander about. And everyone seems to have quite a mixed basket of things, which is great. And obviously, with this weather, the new ice cream has been a massive hit. That ice cream is made by a great guy called Simon in Newcastle in County Down, so just down the road. He must have opened that business maybe 3 years ago, a beautiful gelato parlour on the promenade in Newcastle, where he makes all his own gelato. Just this week, actually, he's expanding to have his own production unit outside of that. And, you know, you can barely believe the quality of the gelato. You know, every new flavor, we get a different mix all the time, and every new flavor is stunning. The sorbets are so intensely flavored. You know, they're just, yeah, they're really great. We're really happy with those too.
This thing is, oh yeah, Dorayu.
Yeah, oh my God, we're obsessed with this.
So everybody is talking about this at the minute, and we put out an Instagram or a tweet about it the other day, because we had seen it on the shelves a lot of times before. And we grabbed a jar and we were like, yay, we're finally trying this. And everyone was like, oh yeah, I have that every day. I always have that in stock. I've had it for years. And we were like, no one else is talking about this stuff. Where are you hiding this? But this, I guarantee, will fly off your shelves.
It has. Yeah. So we only got this in, what, last Thursday it arrived? And we'd already sold most of the stock we bought in. I had a very similar experience. Took a photo, put it on Facebook, and just the amount of likes and comments, like, instantly was huge. And people were straight away saying, oh, I went to a wedding that those guys catered at, like, it was amazing, I need a jar, or, yeah, so, yeah, really, and it is really tasty. It's a really interesting product too, you know, it's something a bit different, which is great, and the branding is exquisite.
It is.
It's really spot on, yeah. If you could maybe pick, like, three items on the shelves that fly out.
Ooh, Abernethy butter, of course. It's huge for us here.
And at Christmas, the brandy butter, maybe?
Yes, when we can get it. Again, demand so high on that for Alison. Yeah. You know, that's a little project that she was working on. And yeah, it's really, really difficult to get, but it's gorgeous. And we're soon to get this new, the Abernethy black butter, the fermented garlic. The whole Abernethy butter range goes really, really well. The other big one is Youngbuck. We touched on that earlier from Mike Thompson. Because it's so local, because it's so good, because it's so creamy, because it's so delicious on everything, it goes really, really well.
Have they ever tried that in ice cream before?
I think somebody did. Murphy's, give it a go.
Murphy's, you know, are they originally from Dingle? But they have an ice cream parlour in Dublin now too. Mm. They did it in an ice cream a while ago. I hadn't tried it. I just remember seeing it on socials. I don't know. Maybe in savory on a dish, like on top of a caramelized onion tart or something. Maybe that would be amazing, but not in an ice cream cone.
No. Loads of people come into us for now the Espini Brazzola and the Youngbuck, because that's a great little dish you can do. Just taking one of those lovely slivers of that air dried beef. a little cylinder of young buck rolled up inside, and boom, there you go. That's a big combo that we're able to sell together. And we do some for some of our canopy nights. That also works really well. The Dexter Black Beef from Rowallan, we're up where Laura lives actually. Andy Meeks, a farmer, we get his one beast a month from his Dexter cattle. Grass fed on the National Trust property up there, beautifully reared, beautifully looked after. Then 28 days mature because it was really rich, deep and black. And yeah, the burgers, the mince, the sausages are a taste sensation on their own, never mind the steaks, the sirloins. But we've got a real appetite now for different cuts. So we do like bavettes, onglets, the flat irons, rump caps. We get asked for so many because you've got, of course, barbecue's a big thing with so many people now. A lot of people wanting to try all these things that they see on the TV. So yeah, this is, you know, fabulous Dexter. And I think the fact that it is sort of limited, people enjoy that fact, you know. You're just saying, look, it's the one beast, that's all we have, you know. Andy McMoore sort of thing. But yeah, no, we love it.
They're really, really gorgeous animals. I live in the middle of a field. It's kind of like got a stone wall around it, and then the fields outside it are where the black beef Dexter cattle live. So I get to like fluff their faces and kiss them all the time, and they're wonderful. Oh. Yeah, they're so well raised. Like they're out there sort of 11 and a half months of the year. They're out in this lovely mixed pasture, and they're so tasty. Oh, and the pies.
Oh, this pie.
There's a great butcher in Newton Ards, which is the next town across, called Milwinnie's, and they make these pies for us. We have, not the best time of the year for them, but they're really good. We have them with young buck, which is obviously, as we've talked about, and we also have them with a local beer called Bullhouse. Mm. So Will, Willie Main makes great beers,
we can sell beer in this shop is to put them in pies. Exactly. Yeah,
you have to be creative and clever about it.
Yeah, Bullhouse Brewery Company is definitely worth hunting down. He does some really quirky beers.
So yeah, you've Mike and him both in Newton Ards and the butcher in Newton Ards. It's, you know, using their ingredients. So yeah, this one's the black and blue Dexter black beef with young buck, and then the black and black, which is with the Willie's porter or stout. And yeah, those are just to die for. Yes, a wee bit more winter time, but any time of year, pie goes down well.
2016 was the year of food and drink in Northern Ireland, which has been in a way credited as kind of being a lot of the attention, especially from mainland Britain and looking up from the south on Northern Irish produce. And it seems to have been a time when a lot more of the names started to get known. In that 2 years, it has gone from strength to strength. Let's look 2 years ahead into the crystal ball with Brexit. What the hell is going to happen?
We move to Dublin. Is that easy?
That's handy for us, so that's great.
We could have a separate shop in Dublin. Maybe one day. Maybe one day. Let's be realistic here. You know, we've just moved into our new space. We're settled for a while. In the dream is like country estate somewhere with butchery and charcuterie and your cheese on site and a beautiful kind of tea room restaurant. But, you know, dream big and who knows.
Yeah. Supposedly our initial vision, or whenever, as I said, we were up in that loft and my parents' attic, was to go online. We did get a beautiful website built, and Laura manages a beautiful website still. So we're trying to get people, you know, as well, who can't get to us to shop online. That's the unique little, I suppose, point of Northern Ireland. We do get great shipping rates, you know, all around Ireland, and then all around the UK as well, because, it's just sort of the status at the minute. So it would be a shame if Brexit came along and spoiled all that. For example, we had a customer last week. We had to send a couple of packages out to Switzerland, which is obviously outside the EU. And then, you know, you really struggle with paperwork, and the cost is so prohibitive then. So we really hope that, you know, things work out and we're still able to ship our parcels to, you know, both near and far, relatively easy and cost effective for our customers. Yeah, we've got a lot more things sort of up our sleeve when it comes to the boxes and the marketing and bringing the Indie Food brand onto that, making it lively, young, fresh. Subscriptions, I know Laura is going to be working hard on those sort of towards the end of next year, whether those are cheese subscriptions or Pacific Food subscriptions that we can get out. So yeah, there's lots to do in the online sphere.
I think for me over the next 2 years, it's going to be really exciting because the last sort of 5 years maybe are really where all these small producers have come from. So, and if we can do sort of this much as it starts to grow, I think the next 2 years we'll see some other really good, high quality products come onto the scene. And hopefully, people say it all the time, and I hate it, but Northern Ireland is a bit behind the curve. So I think it's just more and more people will start caring about what they're eating and what they're buying and be interested in kind of the chain of where their foods come from. So I think, yeah, hopefully. And hopefully that'll be really good for us. So fingers crossed.
Pre-indie food, had either of you any training in retail or in food?
Well, I went to university, like everybody sort of did when I left school, and did a politics and international relations degree, entirely unrelated to anything I do now. I mean, I learned how to write, I suppose, but so content creation, I suppose. And then I managed a couple of restaurants for a few years, and then I worked for James Nicholson Wine for sort of over 6 years. So I've always been really into food and really into wine. And then when I was with Jim, I did a lot of sort of the food and wine matching and a lot of the digital marketing and the website and sort of stuff with the restaurants. So that was really exciting. And then, well, that's it. Then I came, then Johnny was like, you should come and work with me. We should sort of get this business going together. And that's that. Johnny has a much more peculiar line into him.
I can't wait to hear this one.
Well, I was an accountant. That's all I'm saying. No, I'm only joking. I grew up, in a family shop, actually in Newtownard, so the next town over, which we referred to a few times. So I suppose retail was in the blood, learning that. I enjoyed that, working with my mum and dad with that. I did do accountancy. I went away to Dundee, studied that. Didn't exactly love it, but, went on with it. Went to Dublin for 4 years, down to AIB, Balls Bridge, then came up home as I was just getting too crazy to buy houses and stuff down there, so came back up to Belfast. Guinness was still half the price that it was in Dublin, which was even better. It's now the same price, which I can't quite believe, but
gentrification of Belfast.
Oh yeah, it's come on leap. It's well ahead of the curve when it comes to drink prices. But I came back up, started to work for Ulster Bank. I wanted to take a career break. Got interesting reading on microfinance. So myself and my wife, who was into the cooperative sort of side of finance, we went off to the South Pacific, to a little country called Vanuatu, and lived on an island for 2 years and helped mamas or females with small savings and small loans. And a lot of that was to do with food and drink, obviously, because it's such a bountiful place. Mangoes, pawpaws, tomatoes, avocados. So you were seeing them transact in small currency. So I got my education in microfinance when I went out there, but also got an education in food and small business as well, and seeing how to work, and eating with the seasons, and eating all things that were local. Everything had to come from the island. So all this was sort of, I suppose, ticking along in my head, sort of inspiring me. Done a bit more work down through West Africa with Goal when I came home. Had a bit of bad health, so had to basically stay in the island of Ireland for 3 years. Couldn't come off it. So started to relive my childhood a little bit and go around all those great places around the coastlines and find these great markets. And I says, oh, all this stuff, this is fantastic. Got to get this all back to Cumber here and sell it online, as one does. So my finance head wasn't on. I suppose my heart was starting to, and my head wasn't following quite at that time. But that was the basis of it. So got a bit of money together, got a website together, got that loft kitted out, got the stock in, and then the reality hit. What they do with this,
and then the rest is history, right?
The rest is history. I had as I said, I started off in the market scene, and still do it, love it. I love being out in the fresh air and again meeting the producers, talking to the public, getting the feedback. But went out there for 4 years ago, 3.5-4 years ago now, and sold Irish produce. And it eventually, people said, give a shop a go. So that's where that started from, yeah.
It was a pop-up. It was a pop-up to start with, wasn't it? Because I remember being invited. I had a blog, or still have it, but don't have time for it, and was invited to the opening of this shop, Indie Food, in Cumber, up this little kind of metal staircase. And I was like, oh, sure, we'll go for a nosey. And yeah, it all kind of started there. Was that November? You opened before the Christmas?
Yeah, November 2015, was it? Yeah, I think it was that. Yeah, just before Christmas, so it didn't hit at a bad time, to be fair. Managed to get all that stock shifted, which is the main thing. And yeah, it just sort of snowballed. The feedback was good. And we just kept the lease running. Yeah, we were right. It was about 6 months it was meant to be. And yeah, here we are.
How has your customer changed over the years, or have they?
Yeah, they can now don't have to go upstairs, so we see a lot more old elderly customers,
prams,
mothers. Yeah, it's unbelievable. But yeah, have the customers changed much? We've got a very loyal customer base. Don't get me wrong. We've a lot of people who come to see us from all over the island of Ireland, and maybe they just come every 2 months or 3 months. But you know, we love to see them, and then we've got, you know, a great base here in Cumber, which actually was probably the hardest bit to grow, your sort of local town, because here you've still got the attraction of your out-of-town shopping centres, your Marks and Spencers. So people love still, that's a day trip, you know, that's, you know, still very exciting here in Northern Ireland to go to Marks and Spencers. So we had to try and break a little bit of that down, and certainly, you know, I think we've been doing that by reinforcing our story, what it's about, and hopefully telling the story of the producers and where it's coming from. So yeah, we've managed to see, you know, a lot more of local people engaging with us now. It's just fantastic.
And how about the future? What are the plans in the next year, say, for Indie Food?
Oh, I don't know. We're just settling in and catching our breath at the moment. I think the next thing really is to get our events organised for the next few months and get really stuck into those. Hopefully get a few kind of different wine things going on, a few more of the beer and cheese nights, some more supper clubs, and kind of get stuck into them again. And just sort of, we're really feeling our way here with the produce and different things, particularly with making our own things. So it's sort of a wee bit of product development for ourselves maybe as well, more in kind of whether we do really great sandwiches or, you know, that sort of thing. I don't know, Johnny always has crazy ideas, so you should probably ask him.
Well, with that background, maybe, yes.
No more Game of Thrones, but yeah, I think Laura hit the nail on the head. I think we need to settle in to reach, this is a big retail space, a big undertaking for us. And we need to, we'll probably focus in here for a while. And then we'll see what the future holds. Like we've a lot to do online. I think I touched on it earlier on. Whether it's, you know, Christmas is coming up, which is scary, you know, getting your Christmas hampers ready, photographed, subscriptions ready and stuff. So yeah, I think certainly between now and the end of 2018, we're pretty much stuck in those sphere, and then we'll see what the future holds afterwards. We've got great relationships, so a lot of very, very strong relationships with a lot of producers who we've talked with down the years about, you know, doing some, you know, lines for Indie Food, whether it's, you know, a limited edition line, we don't know, but we'd like to pursue that because our passion is ideas, creating products, and so are theirs, and maybe you'll have an influence that you've seen on your travels, whether it's around Ireland or around the world, that you could make some suggestions and maybe come up with a couple of joint products and, you know, maybe, you know, do it, you know, a little bit exclusively for us. So, yeah, we'll probably look at that somewhere down the line too.
If you were to start again, and I know in retail in particular, it's a very difficult thing to just pick one. If you could pick one thing that you might do a bit differently, what would it be, or even change?
Yeah, well, don't retail up steps.
Yeah,
that's the obvious one. Certainly from a shop perspective, and yeah, don't open a website up before you have a shop, because again, it's all about trust. So like, nobody had met me from Adam when I popped that website up online and tried to make a bit of a noise, but you know, that doesn't work. You people still need to meet you and put a face to the name and do everything. So yeah, just, you know, don't run before you can walk on that sense. You know? Yeah.
Indie Food represents the great of the food industry of this island, and in doing so is the perfect reflection of where we are right now. Blessed amongst butchers, cherished with cheesemakers, and lavished with the loveliest producers in general, Johnny and Laura are just two people passionately invested in food with a voracious appetite to spread the word, and we are all the luckier for having them do so.
Everyone in Cumber must be eating so incredibly well since Indie Food opened. There are a handful of other incredible stores like this dappled across the island of Ireland, such as McCambridge's in Galway, Sars in Belfast, Ardkeen in Waterford, Bakestone, Bradley's, Uru in Cork, or the likes of Fallon and Burn. If anything, we hope this episode highlights how necessary it is to support champions of local produce like these, and Indie Food keeps getting better and better and better.